content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Southern Living. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the April 2026 issue of Southern Living magazine. And this week, we will read the Southern Journal that is at the last page of every issue of the magazine. And then we'll continue our top 10 restaurants, the best of the South, that we began in our last episode. All right? The cover of this magazine has a watermelon pink tone to it, and it features a strawberry lemonade jelly mold that's kind of fire engine red and shiny and slippery looking, and it's adorned by some strawberries and lemons. And the recipe for that is in a previous Southern Living podcast, which you can find on our website, ncreadingservice.org, and that would be in the April 10th episode, if you'd like to hear more about that. All right. Are we ready? The Southern Journal is at the back of every magazine, and it's by Rick Bragg, B-R-A-G-G, and it always begins with a cartoon, a caricature of the writer, Rick Bragg. He appears to be, appears to be in his 50s or 60s, and he is, again, it's a character, but so he's got a high forehead and some dark brown hair and a white speckled with brown beard and mustache, kind of a long nose. He's smiling very pleasantly, pleasant-looking man. He's wearing a long-sleeved shirt that is cafe au lait and coffee-colored stripes, vertical stripes. It's a Henley shirt, meaning that it's got those three buttons at the top. That's how it's collared there. And he is lying in an Easter basket. Again, it's a caricature. So the Easter basket is of blush pink and other pastel colors. So they're light, like a lemon, a light butter yellow and powder blue and pink. It's mostly pink is the predominant color, like a blush pink is the predominant color. And it's got a butter yellow ribbon tied in a bow around the handle, which is actually a cross between a pink and a lilac color. All right, beside Rick Bragg, he is lying on top of a lot of greenery in the basket and some strawberries and a little bag tied up of jelly beans, colored jelly beans, and some other candies. That I can't quite discern. Oh, and some Easter eggs, of course, colored Easter eggs. He's got his hands, arms are at beside him. Each hand is on top of an Easter egg. One Easter egg is a grass green, and the other is a red, like a fire engine red. And also beside him is a much larger than he chocolate rabbit sitting down in a seated position, a chocolate rabbit. All right, and we'll begin our Southern Journal. It's entitled, I Will Never Eat Another Egg. Haunting Memories of Easter's Past by Rick Bragg. The doctors tell me it's natural to forget things at my age. I was glad to hear this, since I spent a whole day recently trying to remember my street address back when I lived in Miami in 1992. I do recall that it was under a coconut tree. And that got me to thinking about coconuts, which got me to thinking about coconut candy, which got me to thinking about chocolate-covered coconut eggs, which got me to thinking about Easter. But that's the thing about running down a memory at my age. You chase it round and round, and sometimes it leaves you in the nicest of places. I found myself, quite unexpectedly, on Roy Webb Road, 3 miles outside Jacksonville, Alabama. It was 1965, and I was in the first grade again. I could tell by the cars in the driveway, by my Aunt Jo's gleaming white Chevy Corvair, and my Uncle Ed's blue GMC. It was the oddest of days. We had stayed up late the night before, dyeing eggs, or pretending to. My brothers and I ate an egg for everyone my mother dyed, so by bedtime, we were in some distress. I believed I had killed myself by way of boiled eggs and was a little surprised when my mother shook me awake the next morning and I was still alive. My belly stuck out like Paul Newman's in Cool Hand Luke. "As God is my witness," I told her, "I will never eat another egg." She let me know that the Easter Bunny had left a present at the foot of my bed. That's the beauty of being six. You still get rewarded for stupidity. It strikes me now how I cannot remember a time when she woke me to real sadness, to real bad news. She always allowed me to sleep through the worst of things. The Easter basket was filled with a wad of unnaturally green artificial grass, a handful of jelly beans, a few hard-shelled candy eggs made from sugar baked on more sugar, a hollow chocolate bunny, and a single chocolate-covered egg with a creamy coconut center. If the real eggs didn't get us, the candy kind would. We ate everything but the hard sugar ones, which were not actual food. So we threw them at each other till my mother made us stop. She cleaned us up, and we walked out into what I thought was an egg and sugar hallucination. My uncles were serious men. They built tires at Goodyear, welded stuff, drove bulldozers, smoked Winstons, and chewed plug tobacco, preferring the brand that had a bloodhound on the package. They were burned by the sun and scorched in foundries and had never met a man whose behind they could not kick. And here they were, toting delicate little Easter baskets in their rough hands, taking the greatest of care to hide a few hundred brightly colored eggs in the wild onions and buttercups and willow trees. "Don't look," they said. "Okay," I replied as I proceeded to look. I would like to say it was a near perfect day, and it was, till my aunts called us in for lunch, which consisted of deviled eggs and egg salad sandwiches. There were hundreds of them, thousands. Then I began to shake. That night, my mother gave me some Pepto-Bismol, which was unfortunately similar in color to all those hard-shelled sugar eggs I'd eaten. Then she told me a story, but I can't recall what it was. Maybe I will one day when my mind starts to wander some more. And that's our Southern Journal. Now we'll go back to our classic restaurants, the South's Best, the top 10. We weren't doing the classic restaurants. We were doing the top 10 best restaurants in the South. in our last episode, legendary restaurants. That's what this is. Okay, the legendary restaurants. And just to go over them, because so that you won't miss any that we missed last in our last episode, we will list them 1 to 10. 1, it was the Old Pink House. 2 is the Old Middle Restaurant. 3 is Burns Steakhouse. Oh, excuse me. The Old Pink House is in Savannah, Georgia. The Old Mill Restaurant is in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Burns Steakhouse, Tampa, Florida. 4, Columbia Restaurant, Tampa, Florida. 5, Angus Barn, Raleigh, North Carolina. 6, Joan's Stone Crab, Miami Beach, Florida. 7, Mary Mac's Tea Room, Atlanta, Georgia. 8, Pugin's Porch, Charleston, South Carolina. 9, Mrs. Wilkes' Dining Room, Savannah, Georgia. And 10, The Loveless Cafe in Nashville, Tennessee. And in our last episode, we went to the Old Pink House, The Loveless Cafe, Columbia Restaurant in Tampa, Florida, Angus Barn, and the Old Mill Restaurant. And we're now at Joan's Stone Crab in Miami Beach, Florida. Joe Weiss and his wife Jenny had already been running a little South Beach lunch counter for the better part of a decade when a Harvard researcher popped in for breakfast and changed everything they thought they knew about stone crabs. The nearby bay was full of the crustaceans, but back in 1921, nobody was eating them. The researcher asked Weiss, "Why not?" And by midday, he'd brought back a sack full of the crabs, which Weiss threw in a pot of boiling water, only to discover that he was not alone in loving their salty, sweet taste. This eatery became known as Joan's Stone Crab for its specialty dish. Over a century has passed since then, and the meaty claws still come to your table chilled and cracked with a mustard sauce. Sides of coleslaw and hash browns complete the meal. Although Florida's stone crab season only runs from October 15th through May 1, Joe's is open year-round. And the claws can even be shipped across the country via Gold Belly. Okay. Pugin's Porch, Charleston, South Carolina. The building that Pugin's Porch resides in has been around for more than 135 years. But its namesake was only part of its history for a tiny sliver of that time. Pugin, as the tale goes, was a scrappy, lovable dog who stuck around well after the home's last occupants boxed up their belongings and handed over their keys in 1976. Even though the beautiful and historic Charleston house was converted into a restaurant, Pugin stayed, happily sneaking table scraps before he died a few days later. Diners have toasted to him ever since, trading stories of feeling ghost-like brushes along their legs during low-country meals. Inside the cheery, butter-yellow house, heart pine floors and twin staircases set the scene for patrons munching on Carolina crab cakes, pimento cheese fritters, and bone-in fried chicken. Brunch is served daily from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and dinner follows at 4:30 p.m. No matter the time of day, end your visit with a cast-iron skillet full of peach cobbler topped with a biscuit streusel, or choose banana pudding made with a secret ingredient, bourbon. And listeners, there's a photo of it here. The house is on a corner, and looks modest enough, but it is that bright butter yellow. I would call it more a sunshine yellow. But it has a porch. It's made of wood. It's got a peaked roof, two floors, and an American flag. And it is set back from some wrought iron railings. And those railings are what flank the three steps of the front stoop when you go up the front porch. And again, it's got a front porch on both the bottom and top floors, and they have ceiling fans on that on those porches. And there are flower boxes along the porches with some green ferns, filled with green ferns. There's some trees. There's a palm tree to one side in the front on the sidewalk. There's a sidewalk in the front and a lamppost and another big green deciduous tree or hardwood tree to the other side of the house. And then the next building, which you can see from the house, the next building just across in this photo, the next building in this photo has on its side a mural, and it is the mural of a painting by Renoir called The Boating Party. And it's a number of people who are sitting on a porch, not unlike, I guess, the ones at Pugin's right next door. They're sitting on a porch, and some are standing around, relaxing against the railing, men in their undershirts, sleeveless undershirts, boaters' hats, and women sitting there, and they're just luxing out there on white linen tablecloths. And that's our story about the legendary restaurants of the South. But for two editor's picks. The first editor's pick is Bottega in Birmingham, Alabama. Bottega's story begins not when it first opened, but rather years earlier, when a young chef named Frank Stitt became enamored with Italian food during visits to Europe in his 20s. By the time he was 30, he was well on his way to becoming an icon, having launched Highlands Bar and Grill in 1982 in Birmingham. More trips to Italy followed, and he developed an even deeper infatuation with the cuisine. He's been experimenting with it since 1988 at Bottega, which, in combination with Highlands and Chez Fonfon, another of Stitt's ventures, has turned out some of the region's best culinary professionals. One notable name on that list? The now retired Dolister Miles, who was a James Beard Award Outstanding Pastry Chef winner in 2018. Her coconut pecan cake remains a must-get dessert. And the other editor's pick is Commander's Palace in New Orleans, Louisiana. Few places have shaped the Crescent City's national reputation for Creole cooking as much as Commander's Palace. And it all started with Ella Brennan. The original matriarch of the expansive New Orleans culinary family had a gift for identifying talent, tapping chefs like Emeril Lagasse and Paul Prudhomme to lead Commanders. Although Brennan died in 2018, her daughter and niece still run the place, along with its first female executive chef, Meg Bickford. This new generation brings with them a sense of whimsy and warmth, and they're writing a whole new chapter for the Louisiana fixture. And now, listeners, here are the top 20 small towns voted in the South's Best, Southern Living's South's Best of 2026. These are the top 20 small towns from the mountains to the coast. These idyllic hamlets are begging to be your next weekend escape. Number one, the St. George Inn in St. Augustine, Florida. And there's a photo of that here, listeners. It's a two-story, dark peach-colored structure, and it's, it appears to be concrete structure. But it has a wooden top with two wooden dormers that are white, and it's trimmed. The windows are trimmed. They are sash windows, each of six panes, so they're 12 paned windows, and they are flanked by some grass green shutters. And along the front of the building, it could be brick, listeners, that I called concrete, of course. Yeah, brick. There is a green all along the bottom of the structure. And there, it's on a cobblestone street on a corner with an overhanging hardwood tree. And there is a young woman with long blonde hair and a short white dress. And she is standing beside her bicycle that she is holding on this cobblestone street, and she's wearing sunglasses. Here are your top 20 small towns. Number one is St. Augustine, Florida. Number two, St. Simon's Island / Golden Isles, Georgia. Number three, Fredericksburg, Texas. Four, Fairhope, Alabama. Five, Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Six, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Seven, Destin, Florida. Eight, Beaufort, South Carolina. Nine, Blowing Rock, North Carolina. 10, Tybee Island, Georgia. 11, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. 12, Bardstown, Kentucky. 13, Gulf Shores / Orange Beach, Alabama. 14, Oxford, Mississippi. 15, Blue Ridge, Georgia. 16, Anna Maria Island, Florida. 17, Southport, North Carolina. 18, Williamsburg, Virginia. 19, Sanibel Island, Florida. And 20, Fernandina Beach, Florida. Continuing the South's best, here are the top 10 classic restaurants. There's one thing these places have in common: a loyal following that's lasted for years. One, Biscuit Head, Asheville, North Carolina. Three, Georgia Sea Grill, St. Simon's Island, Georgia. Four, Fleet Landing, Charleston, South Carolina. Five, Caps on the Water, St. Augustine, Florida. Six, Malone's, Lexington, Kentucky. Seven, Doc's Seafood Shack in Orange Beach, Alabama. Eight, The Fish House Restaurant and Seafood Market in Key Largo, Florida. 9, The Red Bar in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida. And 10, Page's Okra Grill, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Top 20 beach getaways: sunny stretches of shoreline that delight visitors with much more than just sand and surf. Number one, Orange Beach / Gulf Shores, Alabama. Three, Destin, Florida. Four, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Five, Tybee Island, Georgia. Six, South Padre Island, Texas. 7. Isle of Palm, South Carolina. 8. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. 9. Sanibel Island, Florida. 10. Anna Maria Island, Florida. 11. Folly Beach, South Carolina. 12. St. Augustine Beach, Florida. 13. Siesta Key, Florida. 14. Kiawah Island, South Carolina. 15. Virginia Beach, Virginia. 16. Pawleys Island, South Carolina. 17. Sullivan's Island, South Carolina. 18. Oak Island, North Carolina. 19. Ocean Springs, Mississippi. And 20. Panama City Beach, Florida. And where to stay when we're visiting these restaurants or beaches. Here are the top 10 classic hotels for the Southern Living's top 10. 1, the Peabody Memphis in Memphis, Tennessee. 2, the Charleston Place in Charleston, South Carolina. 3, Old Edwards Inn and Spa in Highlands, North Carolina. 4, the Breakers in Palm Beach, Florida. 5, the Marshall House, Savannah, Georgia. 8, the Don Cesar, that's C-E and capital S-A-R, in St. Pete Beach, Florida. 7, the Hermitage Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. 8, Williamsburg Inn in Williamsburg, Virginia. 9, the Brown Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky. And 10, Fountain Blue, Miami Beach, in Miami Beach, Florida. And that will be our time for this episode of Southern Living. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you'll join next time. I'm Joanna LaForger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Southern Living is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once more, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. So long till next time.